Thank you all so much for joining us for another episode of the VGC Treehouse. We really do appreciate the support that we've gotten so far on this series. And please do send comments. We really do want to engage with you guys. Been pushing that, but it is a big thing. We want to be able to engage with you guys as much as we can when it comes to constructive criticism, any things that you really liked about the questions that we ask during this series, and maybe even other topics that you'd want to see us cover more when it comes to these discussions. So thank you for the support, but please do take it to the next level. Send us some comments. Hit that like button so we know that you're enjoying the content, as well as subscribe, because there is much on the horizon, like I keep saying, there really is. But thank you all so much. We appreciate you even just viewing the video. We really do appreciate it. We have another amazing guest coming right at you guys today. Couldn't be more excited to have who we have on today, because they are going to be one of my better friends in the community. And after what's transpired for them this year, there's just so much to talk about with this person. I honestly don't think we can cover all the amazing things that we could really talk to them about. So we're going to have to hopefully do a second episode at some point with my buddy here. But if you just want to go ahead, let the people know who you are now.
Hey guys, my name is Kyle Livinghouse. I go by AnimusVGC on Twitter. This year was probably my breakout year, as I qualified for Worlds for the first time, but I also got a day two invite. I cut Nats recently, like 2 weeks back now, and I cut 4 regionals along the way to get the CP I needed for day two, and it's been quite the ride.
Absolutely amazing. Like, come on, man. How? That is absolutely amazing. Everyone should really take a deep look at what you've been able to accomplish, because I think that is outstanding for someone that's still so new to the scene like yourself. So obviously you've been around VGC for a while, like just at least playing it, but when it comes to those live events and all of that, obviously us being good friends, I've been able to follow your journey quite closely, and I know that this has really been a year where you've been able to actually compete at that high level, and just to see that you were able to accomplish all you've done is insane. It's absolutely insane. It's astronomical. It's inspiring. It's all that good stuff. Thank you for joining us, man. Let's hop right into the discussion today. Are you ready?
Yep.
Awesome. So first thing, it's a question that I love asking everyone. Sometimes I switch it up a little bit, but it's generally the same thing, which is how and when did you get into VGC? Always so much interesting answers to this.
Okay, so post 2014 Worlds, Pachirisu won. A lot of people got into the game afterwards, myself included. The first person that I considered a friend was Diego Marino. He goes by Delta VGC. He's long gone now, but he was a decent senior back in the day. And we played a lot on Showdown, and we got a lot of practice, and he eventually connected me to you, Aaron Grubbs, David Huttner, and we just had that whole group. And from there, I did Nugget Bridge Lives. I was doing everything I could besides going to actual in real life events. I did everything online that I could. I watched every stream possible, and that's how I got started, really.
My apologies for that cough right there, but great. The fact you remembered Aaron Grubbs and all those names, yeah, that's really awesome. That just how much we had going on with our little group at that time, and all the amazing people that we were able to work with to further both of our VGC passions, because at the time myself, I was also still just trying to get further into all of that stuff, and that's why I started to try to host events and all that stuff between our little group, just to get everyone more fired up and more passionate about it. And yeah, I just completely remember you just continuing to you played in our events, but then you out of everyone was like, I want to take this to the next level. And that's when you got into all those Nugget Bridge Lives, and you were quickly showing that you were pretty good by doing well in those Nugget Bridge Lives. And I think that's where you very quickly started to build those connections that you have now. So awesome job, man. Just really shows that you had just that next level of fire. And that actually leads us into the next question, which is, what sparked that fire to help you be the motivated and determined individual you become at a VGC, as a VGC competitor? Because I feel like I know other people who've wanted to get into VGC and who have went to events, but when it comes to you, I just feel like there's just a whole notch above it when it comes to how determined and just literally just motivated that you were to get to this point. What sparked that?
I think it's just who I am. Like, I'm a competitive person. Like, as I grew up, I did sports, I did track. Like, I was always, like, I always want to win. Like, if I'm not to a point where I think I can always win, like, I'm going to be improving. And so I've always been improving. I still am improving, and I'm not going to stop. So that's kind of where my mindset is really in line with. And that's what keeps me going, really.
Awesome. I love hearing the overlap. Just like Graham, when we had him on in the last episode, even Graham, he said the whole overlap with sports. I love hearing that. Generally, sports really do bring out a lot of competitiveness. They really have for me as well. So it's cool to see that as well. As you're also quite the track star as well, as I know that you went to some high-level events for that as well. So definitely understandable that you got a lot of your competitiveness from there. And then definitely, I've always seen your really just motivation to want to improve and to get better and to get better and to get better. Never satisfied. That's the way you stay hungry. Awesome. Awesome to see that trait, as a lot of people don't have that. So definitely not something to take lightly. But to move on from there, so honestly, I think there has to be something more to this. So what about your approach to VGC do you feel is different from the typical person or VGC player, if anything at all? Maybe you don't think there's anything different. You just really studied and practiced and all that. But it just seems like with your success that you've had, it almost only makes sense that you benefited from something the general VGC player doesn't. Do you think your motivation is just that high? Or do you think you just really just, it just all came together? Or what do you think, there's anything that a unique trait or something about you that makes you different from the rest of the bunch, especially first time or like VGC players that are just getting to those first big events? Like, what about your approach do you think may be different or really helped you get to this point?
I think my motivation is a lot higher because I went so many years without going to an event, and it was like, this was my chance. Like, I had to pour everything into it or it would be my last. Because you can't just keep spending money going places and just run out of money. I mean, I'm a college student. So I knew, like, if I love this game so much, I have to be good at it to keep doing it. And so it was just everything on the line. Like, I had to do well. Like, there was no other choice for me.
Wow, that's quite the perspective to have. You just said, I'm not taking this lightly. This is my chance, and I'm going to make it worthwhile. That makes a lot of sense, because I remember the days of hearing you like, oh, I can't go to events, this freaking sucks, I want to compete, I hate watching all the time, like, I want to be there. So I remember those days. So I can definitely understand how that slowly but surely just kept building into more and more and more motivation as you finally approached your first events. So really awesome to see that you really, once you got your chance, you didn't play around. Even though we're playing video games, you weren't playing games, you were taking it serious. But okay, to move on from there, tell us a little bit. I always like to, this is another question that I like to ask, because I think it's a huge determinant when it comes to how much someone's able to really get involved in the scene. So what is the local scene in your hometown like, and how much do you give credit to the relationships that you made when it comes to your ability to compete and do well?
So I live in, I'm like an hour northwest of Philadelphia. So ever since Jen quit, I haven't really had locals in my state. I usually have to go about 2 hours either south to Maryland or east into New Jersey to get a decent even PC in. And I mean, it's not that far. I know people have it much worse, but I usually just don't have the time between school and such. So I don't go to locals that often. But when I do, it's with some of the most competitive people I know. I mean, if you look at the NA top eight, like, a lot of people are based out of the Northeast area, from like Ohio to like New Jersey. Like, that's like so many people. That's like half of the top eight just there. You play players like Paul Chua at 1-1 in a PC, and it's like, it's ridiculous. So I think that competitiveness, it just got me all the much, like, it got me all the much better to be ready for like major events that I eventually would go on to. Because when I just started out, like in 2017, I went to a couple locals, and they were really tough locals. Like, I was playing like Tommy Kuhlin on stream for one of my first midseason showdowns. Like, it was a lot of tough matches then. I learned a lot from them.
That's awesome to hear. And I know that you were getting some, doing some carpooling with people like Lightcore and stuff like that. So awesome to see that you were able to build some bonds that have helped further your ability to compete this season. And I think that stuff really matters. So I'm glad that even when Jen quit, RIP Jen, she was amazing. Really sad that happened. But, even with her quitting, that you still, even though they're not far enough to where it's impossible to go to some of those events. So, and then obviously you're in one of the most competitive regions. So I definitely think that had quite a bit to do with your ability to take your game to that next level. So awesome to hear. Moving on from there. So what's this conspiracy theory, now that I'm talking about you carpooling with people, what's this conspiracy theory about you top-cutting events and doing extremely well when you drive to them as opposed to flying. Do you hate jet lag? What's going on, Kyle?
Honestly, I don't have any idea. I've gone pretty close. Like, I've got in Daytona, I got 9th. Madison, I got 9th. Time I'm like right there, and it's like the flying curse, it just gets me. I don't know what it is. But I do think that driving with other people especially, it's a lot more calming than flying, and flying is, it can be a lot more exhausting. Like my Madison flight, we got delayed and we only got in at like 1 a.m. so that could be a factor. I think I enjoy car rides a lot more, so it might set me up better mentality wise for events. I do plan on breaking this curse, but as far as this past season,
you're going to have to eventually. You really are. But the 9th, man, that had to be so aggravating to be right there and just to slightly miss out. So yeah, that definitely sounds like a little bit of a gray cloud that's hanging over your head when it comes to flying and driving. I could see people being on the other side of the coin as well, though, when they're like, oh well, if I'm in a car, it's like I feel like I can't move that much and maybe I get cramps and stuff like that. Or people who get car sickness as opposed to flying, usually it's a little bit quicker of a trip as long as it doesn't get delayed and stuff like that. So it's interesting to see your perspective of you prefer the car, as I can definitely see some people liking the plane. But then I also know I reached out to Melvin K as well to do an interview, and the only reason we haven't done it is just because, or more of a discussion, but the only reason we haven't done it is because he's also suffering from some pretty bad jet lag. But that would only make sense when you're doing flights to different countries. So yeah, just interesting to see those perspective when it comes to traveling, because I think traveling is sometimes an undervalued part of when it comes to how well you do as an event. If you didn't travel well, it's going to be really hard to get your head back into the game when it comes to focusing up. So cool to talk about that a little bit more in depth than we usually do. Next, let's talk about your favorite events of your season, and then let's just take a way deeper dive on how everything transpired for you to get top 8 at NAIC. But start with your favorite events this season, and overall, how you felt about a rotating, for the first time ever, a rotating season where we went from Sun, Moon to Ultra.
Okay, so back in Sun Series, I think my favorite event there, at least, was Roanoke Regionals. It was my second regional cut, but I cut with Salazzle and Talonflame, and it was a lot of fun. And I got to really meet up with one of my best friends in this community, Joseph. We're really close now. And we actually played in cut of that regional where he beat me, but then later got disqualified. So that was a ride, but we ended up being a lot closer after that. And now we're pretty much best friends as far as VGC and even in life, honestly. So it was just that setting up that connection is just so important to me. So Roanoke's always going to hold a place in my heart. As far as another event, I'd probably say NAIC, just because I started 2-2 and then had to win 9 straight, and it just felt so good when everything was on the line for day 2, and like I had to win so many in a row, and I just pulled it off with one of my favorite teams. It just felt really good.
I think that's a really getting on the cusp of, I think, of some like best of all time stuff, because really to win 9 games in a row, I think if you continue to be able to do stuff like that as we move into further future years of VGC, I think we really will see you take another leap when it comes to your ability to do well at these events, because that's absolutely insane. 9 games in a row, come on, man, that is insane. Most people would literally crack under the pressure. But go a little bit into a little bit more detail. I'm not telling you to tell us any sets or anything about your NAIC team, but if you could just give us some general information that you are comfortable with saying, like the team and maybe how you feel about the team's place in the current meta of Ultra, because I do want to get a little bit more information about top cutting NAIC, because that's an international. So we really want to hear your perspective of who did you lose to in those first rounds? Who did you then play in the later rounds, and what big names did you have to overcome? Give us as much as you can to give us a visual of how you were navigating throughout that event.
All right, so I actually lost round 1, which is like the worst thing you want to do to start a tournament off. So I was playing Whimsicott Ultra Necrozma, and it was some random guy. I forget his name now, but I lost to him in a Dallas midseason too. So he's actually pretty good, honestly. I played him quite a few times, and he plays very well. So it's not to be underestimated by any means. And he was using a very annoying Whimsicott Ultra Necrozma team, and I got all the reads right in game 1, and then I felt good. And then he called me on everything, like every fake tier's double up. Every time I tried to project, he didn't Z-move, and then I got Z-move the next turn. Like, he just really caught me off guard. And from there, I won two straight, so I was up to 2-1. And then I had to play Aaron Traylor, who was using the team that Wolf used to win the whole thing. And Celesteela plus Rain is just a pretty awful combination for my team to be able to really take down, because I've actually published my season report and it has all my pace, so I don't really mind saying anything about the team. But basically, the only way I can really hit it is Groudon and Sun, but you know, it's Ryogre and I'm a special Groudon, so it's a little tough. Really quickly
before you go, can you just say the six Pokemon that were on your team for everyone?
Oh yeah, so Kangaskhan, it was Mega, Tornadus Incarnate, Xerneas, Groudon, Komo-O, and Mawile.
Okay, awesome. Now continue. Mega. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. No, you're good. From there, from the 2-2 start, I had some easier games like for the next couple rounds, but then I actually played Joseph, which was probably the hardest game of my life.
Again? Oh my.
We were using the same exact team, and he actually... We were playing at 3-2, and it wasn't quite an elimination match, but he needed top 64 points, so he needed to go 6-3 for his invite. And by me beating him, that was putting him down to 3-3, and then he would have had to win out in the last three, and he wasn't actually able to do that. And we led the same thing. We both led Kang Torn. We traded fake outs, we traded Tailwinds and double edge KOs on the
floor. Oh my god.
And then we both brought in Groudon, we both clicked Earth Power double edge, and I won the Groudon speed tie, so I won.
No! Oh my god.
Yeah, that was quite the set. From there, from there it's just all a blur because I just wanted to win out more for him than for me, honestly, because I was like, I felt like I was stealing his invite, and I was like, okay, I need to make the most out of this now. I need to get this day two, because if I go 6-3, I'm failing him. So the next rounds were just a blur. I don't think I played the strongest opponents. Definitely in the last round, I played Trevor Lang. He had AV Dialga, Kyogre team, and it was very tough for me to break through. And there was a point in game two, I almost forfeited, and that was gonna be the set. But then I was like, might as well play this out. You made a couple nose plays, and I somehow came away with the game 2 win. And then in game 3, I had to land two focus blasts with my Komo-O, and I hit both on his Dialga. So that was a very close set.
Wow.
So that's how my day 1 went, at least.
All right, so let's recap that just a bit before we get too in-depth on day 2. So you literally had to access deny one of your best, if not your best, friends in the community. That had to be really rough, man. Especially on a speed tie and using that exact same team. Like, that had to be really rough. So I understand that even though it wasn't the best added motivation, at least it gave you a little bit of added motivation to just zone in and focus on nothing but making that as worthwhile as possible since you had to beat him. And probably was carrying a pretty big monkey on your back. But I'm glad that you made it fully worthwhile and didn't access deny him just to like lose like every game after that or something. That would be awful. And it's funny because I'm hearing quite a bit of stories like this where people either... They threw to someone because of the pressure and they already had their world's invite, or they had to deny someone else their world's invite to get to where they had their own aspirations of getting to. So it's always rough being in those situations, but at the end of the day, we live in a competitive world. Generally speaking, when you get a promotion, you're taking someone else's promotion. So we live in a world where that's the way it is. So it's definitely something to take away as, sadly, this is how life is, and this is just the way things go. But I'm glad that you at least made it as worthwhile as possible. But now take us into day 2. How do you feel things went day 2?
Okay, so day 2 was pretty smooth. I knew basically that for day 2, I knew I had to basically cut to pass Yuhui because he got top 64, so to pass him I needed 250. So I knew I needed to cut realistically there was no other way, unless Paul and Wolf ended up in top 32 and I got top 16. So like that wasn't gonna happen. So I practiced with Steven Mia against the Wolf team because I lost to Aaron Traylor and I knew I could be playing Wolf. So I put in like 20 games, I only won 2 of them. Then I was like, okay, I give up. I basically have to not play Wolf tomorrow. And so I went in, I was pretty confident though. Even at a 7-2 record, it was a little worse than last year where I went in at 8-1. So I was a lot more confident, I had a lot more experience, and I believed in my team. So I played Dr. Fidget round one, and he was using the really janky Breloom Mawile Walrein team. So I was pretty confident, given that I was a table away from Paul Chua and I did not want to play him. I was like, I'll definitely take this over anything else here. I actually almost got hacked out of game two, but ended up taking that set. Then I played Davide Carrere. He's like a really good Italian player. I think he's probably ranked in the top four of Italy, probably. I know he got a day two invite. So he's very good. And we were playing basically a Zerndon mirror, except he had Whimsicott over Tornadus. So I think that was a slight matchup. And I called him on Xerneas Protect and roared him with my Kangaskhan. So that was that set at the end of game three. From there, I ended up playing Pato, the reigning Berlin International champion, another great Italian player. And I'm just like, I'm just very afraid because he's obviously very good. And he was running Kang Torn as well, except he had Timid Groudon and I had Modest Groudon. So that was a problem. So I really had to maneuver around him. And I was very happy with how I played that set. And then lastly, I had a game versus Melvin, which is actually showcased on stream. Game one, I got a really lucky Precipice Blades missed, and two, I just set my Groudon up in the right spot and won the game. So those were the four day two games that I won, and then I was actually 11-2 headed into the last round. I was already guaranteed cut, so I just scooped to Jonathan Evans, and that was it.
Dang, well, that is quite the ride, and I really think you should really be very proud of what you're able to accomplish there. That's so many good battlers, and just a rigorous schedule, but you really did accomplish a lot. Didn't win the whole event, but man, did you accomplish a lot. And at an internet, I feel like a little bit of luck has to go your way, as we already seen that some luck went your way with Groudon Speed Ties, hitting two Focus Blasts, getting some misplays, stuff like that. So honestly, a little bit of luck has to go your way at these events. So still lots to be proud of there. But okay, let's move on from there. Thank you for giving us so much good insight so that we could really visualize what exactly you were going through as you navigated through NAIC. So moving on from there, is there anything that you wish you did differently about this year? I know you were able to accomplish so much. Is there any cons or anything you really do wish you were able to do differently?
So I actually had a stretch where I missed CP from two regionals in a row. It was Anaheim, California in December, and Dallas, Texas in January. I had a really rough stretch where I probably shouldn't have been playing Pokemon, mostly because of like school and life stuff, and I probably should have taken a step back, but I was too obsessed with getting my invite right away and I was rushing it. At that point, I had no plans at day two. I just wanted my invite, and I was kind of close to my invite and I wanted to get it right away, and I was a little too impatient. And ended up going 5-3 and missing top 32 both times at those events. And the one time I got 34th, so I was like, it was so close. I was within 1% of this. And it was just a rough stretch of 2 months. And I wish I either would have approached that with a better mindset or just taken a break altogether.
That's very understandable, and I think that's a mature perspective to have, because I feel like a lot of people, if they have the opportunity to go to events, they're just like, hey, why not? But it's pretty mature for you to realize, hey, maybe I wasn't just... Maybe I wasn't in the best mindset or in the best position to where I could really focus up on VGC, and it just ended up not going the way that I wanted to, and it's probably predicated to the because of the fact that I wasn't in the best mindset. So very immature, very mature perspective to have. Moving right along, how do you feel heading into Worlds as a competitor for the first time, especially with a day two invite? Like, come on, man. But how do you feel heading into Worlds as a competitor for the first time, and how are you able to zone in so well and disallow nerves to affect your performance? Because obviously this is going to be the biggest stage where you're going to have to do that. So I think it's a pretty relevant question. And then also, like, when you're playing on stream in high-level matches, like against John Paul and against Melvin K, how do you disallow those nerves to take over?
All right, so as far as Worlds, I'm obviously very fortunate to get the day two invite. I don't think many people have gotten day two as their first invite. So it's gonna be pretty interesting having no experience at all. But I gotta look at it as just another tournament. I mean, I've been on big stages before. I know how everything works. They're the same players I've been playing all year. I just have to attack it the same kind of way and keep doing what's working, really. And as far as nerves in general and stream, at first, honestly, it is pretty nerve-wracking. You see the cameras and everything, and it's like, oh gosh, this is a really big match. You know exactly how much money's on the line. and you shouldn't be thinking about it, but you always do. but once you get settled into the match, like three turns in, I think I tend to forget about all that and just kind of get into the set and try to just do your best.
That's a good way to tackle it. I definitely can agree. Just kind of focusing up as much as you can and doing your best and not really worrying about anything else. Makes sense. So let's go. What's the biggest thing you feel you've learned from your breakout season? And what advice would you give to competitors who desperately want to follow your same steps?
I would say more of my building style. I think that I've learned that I like to build teams that are pretty standard, but with a twist. Nothing too crazy, but I like a twist just to kind of give myself a bit of an edge, I feel. I like being like 100% in the know as far as the metagame. So I like to be laddering almost constantly so I know what kind of tidbits, what's actually common right now. Like, are Incineroar slightly faster, slightly slower? Like, what tends to be with what on certain team combinations and compositions, like that kind of thing. Just knowing a little bit of extra information can go really far. Like, a lot of people didn't know I was bulky Tornadus at the NAIC because most people just use Max. But if you had been following me, I used the same team at Madison and at Santa Clara, and some people did know that Overheat was my third move on Groudon or that I was bulky Tornadus because it was the same thing for months. So if you're watching all those streams, if you're paying attention to all those cues, it can help you when you're actually in the match.
That makes sense. It's a game of information, so don't take that lightly. Absorb as much information as you can. And I've definitely seen, anytime I go on Showdown, if I don't see Animus on there, I'm surprised. So it definitely makes a lot of sense. Okay, well then my last question for you, man, is this is definitely going to be one of our shorter episodes just because we've been able to cover a lot in a quick time frame, and you've given us some solid answers, but they have been a little on the shorter end. But let's still keep going. How do we get you to stop saying Epic Gaming? I'm just kidding, but mainly, how did that start? How did Epic Gaming start?
I don't even know. It's just a meme, and I just started saying it, and some people thought it was funny, some people thought it was annoying, and it just started spreading. Like, everyone says it now, and it's kind of hilarious. Like, it's just a joke, but I don't know, Ethan.
No, I think it's pretty funny, too, and I think it's kind of even helped further you as well, because then I've seen so many other people saying it now too. Like, literally, you've got so many other people saying it, so it's really funny. But since we do got a little bit more time, as this is one of our on the lower ends when it comes to amount of time that we've been talking, let's add a few things in here. So one thing I wanted to add in here is how do you currently feel? There's been a lot of drama surrounding Sword and Shield when it comes to the whole national decks not having all the Pokemon. And just and then people comparing the graphics to a game like Xenoblade 2 and just stuff like that, because they're just like, oh, Xenoblade 2 had such a small team and yet their game looks better, but Pokemon saying that they needed to focus so much more on the game product rather than adding all these Pokemon, but yet it doesn't even look better than some of these other games that are on the exact same system, the same Switch, Nintendo Switch. What's your current perspective on Sword and Shield when it comes to all of that stuff?
Okay, so I think personally, like as far as competitive, I think the decks is always a good thing. I think having that different format, that different set of rules is always super interesting. Like, I know some people have made like a fake metagame where they have 50 Pokemon that are allowed. And it's really simpler and easier for newer players to get into. I think 17 is a lot easier to get into because there's only a few things that really worked. It frustrated me, of course, but when I was actually playing the format, but I think it's a good thing for the game. And personally, I don't really care about the casual approach. Like, I'm barely gonna even touch the game, so I really don't care personally. I mean, it can look cool, I mean, sure, but all I really care about is competitive, so I really don't mind it at all, personally.
All right, well, that makes a lot of sense, and I've known that you've always had that perspective when it comes to the casual side. Like, don't really care. I'm here to beat the game as quickly as possible and get on to the good stuff, which is that competitive stuff, so I understand that. If you did see some of their promotions for this game, they did say that they're focusing a lot more on the competitive side of things. How so far do you feel about the whole Dynamaxing feature, and overall, if they're focusing more on the competitive scene, as we have seen, they did make a Play Pokemon account. What exactly do you want that to mean? What do you want focusing more on the competitive scene to actually mean? What's your biggest feature that you would want the competitive side of Pokemon to benefit from?
I think if they had like a dedicated portion in the game that kind of pointed towards or promoted VGC, that would be a good thing. I think them promoting VGC at all, like on the Play Pokemon account and stuff like that, is a good thing. Mm-hmm. As far as like Dynamax and the new mechanics, I mean, there's a lot of speculation that we know a little bit. I'm really not going to worry about it until we have all the information, because I don't know. I just get, if I get too invested in it, then it's just going to hurt just waiting. So I honestly just take my mind off of it and worry about what the current is. And once we have all those details, then I'll look into it. That's my approach to it anyways, because I just don't really want to worry about it. It'll be whatever it is. People can think, oh, it's going to be broken. It's not going to be broken. Like, it is what it is. Like, when it comes out, like, we're not going to be able to change it. So I'm just going to wait for it. And when it happens, and that's what it'll be.
No, I know. I'm with you there. I really haven't been going too crazy with paying attention to it, because I'm just like, we don't know enough. So no reason to do too much speculating. It really would just make me be like, let's just get these games already. But now I'm just kind of like, oh, they'll come when they come. But one last thing, since we do still have a little bit of time as well. How do you feel about the state of the current circuit that TPCI, the Pokemon Company International, provides us with? How do you feel about our current circuit? And if you could change something with that, what exactly would you want to change?
As far as the current circuit, I would change the BFLs. Like, the regional BFL of 8 is just stupid. I would also probably, as far as the LATAM events, like, we can't have 7 6 person special events where an 03 gets 100 TP. Like, it's just straight up unfair. If somebody from the U.S. just goes down and gets 3 points, it puts them way too far ahead for day two, and it's just really rough for the better players that are more deserving of the spots. So I think better BFLs and less LATAM events, so that there are more stacked events eventually. Like, that would be what it would lead to. So that's what I would want to see. I also want to see a internet BFL of 1 to 2. Like, 4 is stupid. Like, you shouldn't have like 300 internet CP from like 3 internets where you just get top 128. Like, that's just way too much. I mean, they do want to incentivize players to go more worldwide, and I think that's fine as far as travel award stuff. I think as far as the stipend race and how that goes, I think it should count for those. But as far as your overall CP count for day two, I think it shouldn't. Maybe up to 2 would be okay, but 3 or 4, if you have that many finishes, it's too much.
That's a very fair point, and I actually saw some people already starting to discuss those BFLs, so thank you for going a little bit more in depth for our viewers on that as well. Overall, thank you so much for your time, Kyle. This was very worthwhile. Can't wait to see how you do at Worlds. I'll be rooting you on heavily, man, and just hoping for the best. And I can't wait to also see your progression into a brand new VGC season as we do inch closer towards Sword and Shield. If you have any shout-outs, if you want to do those right now, and then we can get on the heck out of here.
All right, so I'll shout out Joseph for being, like, my best friend and everything. Like, we've been doing everything since Roanoke together. Like, without him, like, I would have, like, half the CP I have currently. He just gives me another perspective on things. He's given me straight-up pace, like, the night before regionals. Like, Dallas, I panicked, and he just gave me his pace. So that was always nice. He's always there for me. So big shout-out to him. As far as he has a group chat that we're in, C9 Cult, we're a really cool group of guys. Everyone there has really impacted me over the last year, so big shout outs to them, and thanks for having me, of course. So shout outs to you for having this interview with me.
Of course, man. People want to hear what's going on with this Kyle Livinghouse guy who keeps top cutting regionals and doing so well. Let me figure out a little bit more about him. So I think this is going to be one of those videos that I hope gets quite the viewership, and that I hope people really enjoy what we discussed here today. But either way, man, you've been awesome as always. Definitely need to catch up with you more once your life fully calms down after Worlds, and really just talk about everything, because you've been doing so much this year. There's a lot to still discuss. But like I said, I'm excited for your future, man. Your future is extremely bright as a VGC player, and I couldn't be more excited for the fact that you really were able to make it matter when you were able to finally go to events. But that's going to be all, folks. Thank you for tuning in to to another VGC Treehouse episode. If you made it this far, you are the GOAT, the greatest of all time. Not a lot of people make it this far, so thank you so much. Once again, hit that subscribe button if you're new, because we're just going to keep bringing these videos out as we're able to get amazing guests like Mr. Living House on here. And then we have more stuff coming as well, some regular content as well as some bigger announcements, so you don't want to miss that. Hit subscribe, like the video so we know you enjoyed it, and give us some feedback on the questions, on Kyle's answers, and just on some constructive criticism as well, if you so choose. Overall, though, that's all. Have a good one. Peace out.